matter what happens, I'm leaving, turning pro. I have to make money. Draft night comes, I got my family and friends there. You know, we get through the first round, nothing. Second round's coming, like, yo, at least I got to get the second round. Get all the way to 60, nothing. So now I'm like, where do I go from here?
That's Dwayne Dedman, who plays center for the NBA's Miami Heat. You'd think that for Dwayne, who was 7 feet tall by the time he was 18, a career in professional basketball was inevitable, perhaps even unavoidable. But even for the most talented and physically gifted individuals, building a career in pro sports never comes easy. For Dwayne, even with his size and athleticism, it was an uphill battle to convince both his coaches and his family that a pro basketball career was within reach. I'm excited to share Dwayne's story on this episode of Still Cherried.
When I was little, I wanted to be a professional football player. So, yeah, so I wanted to be a cornerback, or not a cornerback, free safety. That was always my dream. I even had a book that I did in class that was like kind of like, draw up your future house, future car, and your future profession. And in the book, I was like, I want to be a professional football player. So that was always my goal. But I couldn't. Mom wouldn't let me play football, so that went out the window very quickly.
So growing up, I was hoping you could talk a little bit about your mother's, you know, religious beliefs, traditions, and how that affected you, you know, as a kid, what you were allowed to do, what you weren't allowed to do.
Yeah, so growing up, my mother, she's a Jehovah's Witness. So she's very, very involved in her church and stuff like that. So at a young age, I always wanted to play sports, but she always would deny me. Her favorite thing to say was, you can't serve for two masters. So that was kind of the overlying shadow every time I asked, like, you can't serve for two masters. And then eventually when I was in middle school, I finally convinced her to let me get on the team. And it wasn't basketball, but I got on the volleyball team. So this was kind of like my opening up, like, all right, I'm getting into sports, because she used to play volleyball when she was younger. So kind of just appealed to her, you know what I'm saying, her senses. But I got on the team, and then I ended up getting into like a little argument with one of the assistant coaches. And then from that, she was like, no sports, you don't know how to control yourself. And it just kind of helped play into the whole situation. So when I went to high school, it was still no, like, can't serve for two masters, not happening. So basically, like, when I turned 18, that's when I kind of told her, I'm like, all right, I'm an adult now. You know what I'm saying? Like, according to, you know what I'm saying, the state, like, I can do what I want to do. You know what I'm saying? So
for her, she just felt like it was going to get in the way of what she saw as more important things, school and all that.
Exactly, before anything else. And it was a lot. You know what I'm saying? It was a lot, so especially at a young age. But so when I turned 18, I kind of just, like, yo, this is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to play. So I finished. Ended up getting on the team. I didn't play. My coach didn't put me in at all. I got in high school senior year. And mind you, like, junior, sophomore, freshman year, they all, like, coaches always been like, oh, come try out for the team. Come get on the team. Never happened. But when I turned 18, I got on the team. But now I'm on the team and now I'm not playing. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, all right, whatever. Like, at least I'm on the team. I got in one game. We were playing, I remember, Eastside High School. So we're playing Eastside High School. I got the ball, went, dunked it. First dunk of the game. First dunk ever in the game. Ran down the court, raising the roof. Like, going crazy. Jumped up, slapped the other backboard. Like, it was a whole, I remember that day. Like, it was yesterday. Like, that was a good feeling for me. But, and the coach didn't like that, so he kind of got upset about that. That's not what we're about. Speech after the game. Hit my cool. I didn't snap like I did in middle school. So it was just a little learning experience. And then from then on, I didn't play again. And then I felt that I could have helped the team. Like, we were in the playoffs and we're playing like a lot of big kids from like up in the valley and stuff like that. And we had a team with some size, and I was like, yo, like, I thought this was the game he was actually going to put me in, like, just not even to, like, really score, but just play defense, provide size, didn't play. So I was like, all right, whatever.
So you're having all these opportunities to contribute with your size, and the coaches aren't really putting you in.
No, I definitely wasn't playing. And so then after that, I was like, you know, after a school or whatever, I was deciding what to do next. So what next was, like, so my mom had told me I should go to Antelope Valley Junior College for this water treatment course. So I was like, all right, cool, looked into it. And at the same time, I'm like, they got a basketball team. But let me go ahead and hit up the coach, see if I can try this basketball thing again. So I ended up emailing one of the coaches, Newton Chalette, and he kind of pointed me in the direction to talk to their head coach, and which was Dieter Horton at the time. And so I ended up pulling up on Dieter in his office, and then he was like, he was like, all right, cool, like, you know, heard a little bit about you, not too much, because I don't really have, like, a resume or anything, but I was like, you know, we're all just ready to play, like, try out whatever I need to do. And he was like, all right, come back tomorrow, such and such time, and I'll put you to a workout. So came back the next day, let me do a little workout. And then he was like, okay, like, but, like, mind you, bro, like, I'm like, I've never had a workout before in my life. Like, I don't even know, like, at this point, I didn't even know what Mike it was. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's naming drills, and I'm like, yeah, you don't have to show me, like, you know what I'm saying? So we finally, like, you know what I'm saying, actually get to doing a workout or whatever, and then kind of tells me after, he was like, all right, what I'm going to do, he was like, I want a gray shirt, which means, like, I'll be on the team, I'll be traveling with the team, but I won't be able to play. Like, I'll be able to practice, do everything, but it just can't play. And the year doesn't count against me. I'll be a part-time student. So I'm like, all right, cool. That works for me. So I go home, tell my mom, and she's not having it. Like, no, like, you tried the basketball thing in high school, blah, 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 blah. Like, so it's me, and she ended up putting me out. So I had to, at this point, I had to go find my own place to live while I was in college. Luckily, I was on financial aid. I was able to, you know, figure out a rooming situation that was close to the school. Actually, Coach Dieter Horton, he actually helped me set all that up and helped me get to my find a place to live.
You went on to play pretty well, from my understanding, at Antelope Valley College, at least, you know, for someone who had as little experience as you did. Can you tell me a little bit about the process of going from Antelope to getting it accepted into USC?
My first year at Antelope, so what I was getting to my first year, like, when I was gray-shirting, I was recording the game. My next year, we come into the summer, and, you know, teams, like, if you're tall, teams are looking, you know what I'm saying? So it definitely helped out a lot to be tall. And at this point, I'm like 6'10", you know what I'm saying, almost 7 foot, just tall to tall. So, you know, we have teams in the gym. I've been working on my game the whole year, like, trying to get better. We had Fresno State in that were, like, you know, kind of interested. They were looking at me. I actually had drove up a couple times to Fresno State to, you know, check out the campus and stuff like that, unofficial visits or whatever they're called. And then the turning point for me was there was a camp at USC, at the junior college camp at USC that we had put on. And that's when it kind of, like, blew up for me. Like, that's when college coaches, like, were there. Everybody was there kind of seeing me. USC came to offer, I believe, I want to say West Virginia had an offer. Washington was another offer. So that's when it really, like, showed up on the scene for me. And at the time, like, I didn't even think it was going to happen. You know what I'm saying? I'm just out there playing basketball. Like, I literally haven't played, like, a game of organized basketball yet, like, for a team at this point. And this is just summer. You know what I'm saying? Summer junior college stuff. So just getting ready for the season. And I committed to, USC. And so then they were like, all right, like, you play your first year, but we don't want you to waste another year in junior college. So I played my first year, and then my second year that I was supposed to play junior college, I redshirted and basically just passed all my classes for one semester. And then after I passed class for one semester, I was eligible to transfer because I gray-shirted that first year, which helped me get my have my credits to be able to do that. You know what I'm saying? So I was able to transfer, get to USC early with so I get to practice against Alex Stevenson and Nikola Vucevic.
I remember Vucevic, yeah. So, and I was going to ask about that. So you get to the USC campus, to the team, and, you know, even before that, you're being recruited by some pretty big, I mean, you just named some pretty big programs collegiately, but you've never, like you said, you've never played, like, a legitimate game. How unique are you? How much of an outlier are you then when you come to SC, you relative to, like, all the other guys on that team?
Big outlier, you know what I'm saying? I mean, all these guys grew up playing basketball, and now I'm like, Division I level, you know what I'm saying? It kind of just like, even at the time, like, it really didn't hit me, like, the level of, you know what I'm saying, stuff that I was going through. You know what I'm saying? Like, that doesn't really happen to a lot of people.
Are guys, like, curious about you? What, your story? Like, you know, here's this guy who's, like, almost 7 feet tall, but's never played a legitimate game before?
I mean, no, not really. I mean, it was kind of, like, just accepting. Like, I mean, I wasn't playing, like, coming in to, like, take anybody's spot, considering it was their last year anyways. So it was just kind of like me coming in, bringing size, bringing physicality in the body for them to, like, go against in practice, which also helped me. You know what I'm saying? Like, just imagine coming in and guarding Nikola Vucevic, how skilled he is, you know what I'm saying, around the basket, trying to stay in front of him. He's getting all this, just being able to move my feet. And I feel like that helped me out, like, a lot on the defensive end, and having to bang with Big Al. You know what I'm saying? Al ain't no slouch. You know what I'm saying? So big body, physical, dunk you, like, so. It was good to just be out there and play and just go against, like, that level of talent, which I think helped my confidence.
In Vucevic, for example, you're going against a guy who is just as big as you, but has probably played a lot more, has a lot more experience than you do. I mean, was that humbling at first? Was there kind of a learning curve for you?
Yeah, he was my first couple of days. He was killing me, cooking, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was just kind of like, okay, now I got to stay on my feet, try and stay in front of him and, like, make plays off his moves. But like I said, Vooch is an incredible talent. You know what I'm saying? So it was tough. You know what I'm saying? It was tough days. But it was fun. Like I said, I'm just a competitor. So I enjoyed the competitiveness that was brought.
You know, you end up, getting on the floor for USC and you know, making a pretty big impact, you know, especially defensively. I understand your time at USC was, you'd probably characterize it as a lot of ups and a lot of downs too. I'm curious though, what your relationship was like with the coaching staff at the time and sort of, especially as you got into sort of like sophomore junior year, you're starting to think about the NBA a little bit. Were they supportive of you? Were they still a little skeptical given your experience and all that?
My coach was Kevin O'Neill when I was there, and he ended up getting fired my second year. And then we finished the season with Coach Cantu, and then they brought in Andy Enfield. So it wasn't like a coach that had brought me in. I was communicating with him about leaving and going to the league. It was a new coach coming in and trying to get me to stay. You know what I'm saying? So that's a whole other story. Like, it was a situation, you know what I'm saying, it was going on. Like, my mother was, she was about to get laid off of work, like that. The job she was working with was doing cutbacks. Everybody was losing their jobs. And so for me, it was, I needed help. You know what I'm saying? I needed some way to make some money or whatever it would have been. So kind of like brought that to Andy, like, look, like if I stay, like, I have to figure out some kind of way, like, I can get a job and work and be able to help my mom and be able to play at the same time or whatever it may be. And he kind of was just, like, the way he came at me was, I didn't really appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? He kind of told me that my mom would be all right. Just tell her to hold off another year. And then he told me that without him, I would never make more than $70,000 without his help or whatever, something like that. And those two things didn't sit right with me. And at that point, I was over. So I was like, it's over. Like, no matter what happens, I'm leaving. I'm turning pro. I have to make money. And at this point, the $70,000 thing is right here. You know what I'm saying? So that was like my big, big motivator for that whole, my whole first year.
Sounds like a lot of pressure for somebody who's 20, 21 years old.
23.
Still a young guy in their early 20s. You know, it sounds like a lot to deal with and to not have the support of, you know, even though it's not somebody you came up with in the program, that must have been, added to the pressure that you felt.
Yeah, it definitely was. It just added more to the chip on my shoulder. You know what I'm saying? More to the show and prove factor of my story.
So you go to the draft, you declare for the draft.
Yeah.
And then what happens in the draft?
So the draft comes, like, I've been training, working out. I went to, like I had, like, 18 workouts, like, with teams, like, during the combine. And I'm just flying all over the place. I had some really great workouts, which I thought was, like, going to be the ones for me. But draft night comes, I got my family and friends there. We're in at the time, it was Travail Gaines training facility. And we're watching the draft, and, you know, we get through the first round, nothing. Second round's coming, like, yo, at least I got to get in the second round. Get all the way to 60, nothing. So now I'm like, fuck, like, where do I go from here? As soon as the 60th pick is done, the Dallas Mavericks called me and was like, yo, look, like, you know, it's draft night, things happen, but we want you to be, like, if we had a 61st pick, we would want it to be you, but we really want you to just come in and play summer league with us, and, you know, we just kind of see how it goes and come to our little training camp for summer league. And I was like, all right, for sure, like, I'm ready for it. Talked to my agent, set it up. Next day, like, I told my trainer, I said, we in the gym. Like, it ain't nothing left. Like, we back at it. So it was from there, we were working and then getting preparing for that. Then I had another, so two summer league teams offered me. I was Miami Heat, ironically, and Dallas. So Miami was doing summer league in Orlando before Dallas was in Vegas. So I flew to Miami, did their training camp, played summer league for them in Orlando, stunk it up, like, terrible basketball, bro. Like, it's just probably the worst basketball I've ever.
Why do you think that happened? Were you just, like, you know, away, like, far away from home and just?
I think it was just, you know, like, NBA basketball, like, even summer league, like, it's a little slower. I'm just kind of, like, out of the rhythm. I'm moving fast, trying to do shit, and nothing was working for me. It was just maybe jitters, nervous, like, it could have been a lot of stuff going on, you know what I'm saying? So terrible summer league. But, you know, I played hard. So it didn't matter what was going on, I still played hard. And I think that was, you know, one thing that kind of stuck with Miami as well. Just like how hard I played would kind of like bring the story back together. But then I went to Vegas with Dallas. So I left at halftime from Orlando, playing a game. I played till halftime, left at halftime, went to the airport, flew to Dallas, did their training camp, flew with them to Vegas. Playing in Vegas, text message from Rick Carlisle. He's like, yo, I want you to come to my hotel room. I want to talk to you about some things, blah, blah, blah. And I'm, my head, I'm like, fuck, it's over. Cutting me. I ain't been doing shit. They cut. They don't like me, blah, blah, blah. Just all the negative stuff is flooding right now. So I get into his room, and it was actually probably one of the most positive conversations like I had with a coach at, up to that point. You know what I'm saying? Because he kind of brought me in and was like, yo, like, I know, you know, it's a lot of pressure on you right now. At this time, too, I had there was a story being written about it. Like, somebody was, like, trying to document everything and make, like, a whole story. So they were kind of following me. It's like, I know you've got a lot of going on, a lot of scrutiny. It's like, I just want you to just focus on just yourself, like, you know what I'm saying, being you, being true, like, to who you are, relax, look, like, just encouragement. Just, you know what I'm saying, just giving me a lot of encouragement. I don't really verbatim remember everything he said. But that kind of helped me, like, gave me a little peace, you know what I'm saying? And then I ended up having one of my better games, I think the next one we played. I think that might have been our final game. So I ended up had a pretty good game to end it.
Really quick, going back. So you said that there was somebody, like, writing a story about you?
Yeah, they were doing a documentary, but they didn't end up publishing it because I think they ended up publishing it, but they took my part out because they really wanted to see, like, my reaction, like, after the draft, and I kind of like cut that out because I'm like, you know, like the same. I ain't really trying to have all that, but so that went down like that. But I think they definitely still put it out. I don't remember what company it was. I forget.
Understood. So you get to have this conversation with Rick Carlisle, the coach of the Mavs at the time, and you then go, you finish out summer league, and you have a pretty good game.
Yeah. So I closed it out kind of with a better game than all the games I've had. And then from there, it's just like, all right, now, like, what's next? You got to get ready for a regular training camp or try and find a team now. Now we got to try and find another team. So it ends up Golden State. Golden State calls and wants to bring me in for their training camp. And at the end of the day, like, okay, they're bringing me in for X amount of money. And then if I don't make the team, like, they cut, then I'll just go to their D-League affiliate team and just play there and hope for a call them. So I ended up doing that. Ended up after the preseason got cut, ended up going to the D-League. And they actually called me up for my first, like, regular season D-League game. Called me back up. I think Jermaine O'Neal had got hurt. So I went back up and – And then I was, you know what I'm saying, got the call up. So I was with the team, but still didn't play. I believe they sent me back down and called me up one more time and then sent me back down and called up one of my teammates. And that was kind of like, okay, like that was another chip on my shoulder. Like, because then he played, you know what I'm saying? Like, I had been up there with y'all this whole time and y'all still ain't give me an opportunity. Who was the coach? Mark Jackson at the time. So he didn't give me the opportunity, but as soon as, you know, my teammate got his call up, he immediately played, you know what I'm saying? And that kind of like, that's another, you know, I'm stacking chips on my shoulder at this point, you know what I'm saying? So I was like, all right, like that was another thing that kind of just always stuck with me.
When you're in D-League, is there a lot of like sort of coaching, like support, or is it really kind of like sink or swim, whoever floats the top rises to the top and whoever doesn't, doesn't?
No, there's a lot of coaching. My coach, we had a good coaching staff.
So you felt like you got a lot of support in D-League? You really?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time in the gym. So who was the coach? Coach Casey. That's who it was. He was our head coach. And then we had Phil Hubbard was an assistant coach. My guy. And ended up playing. And then we ended up getting ready for the D-League showcase. So at this point, like, I'm averaging 15-15 in the D-League. You know what I'm saying? So now we're getting ready for the D-League showcase. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, go to the showcase, kind of do my thing or whatever. Had a couple of interviews, I think, with the teams or whatever that were there. But as the final day, I forget who it was. He had came up to me and he was like, yo, I work for Philadelphia. Here's my card. Can you get to my agents? I would like to contact them and talk to them. As soon as possible. I said, all right, for sure, no problem. Took a picture. Like, as soon as we walked up, took a picture, sent it to my agent. Was like, yo, he said, call him, see what's going on. So they called him. And after that, I ended up getting a 10-day from Philly, from the 76ers. So I go up to Philly, and this is during the process years. But it was definitely the bad years for Philly. This is when they drafted Michael Carter-Williams, rookie of the year campaign, so this is that year, so I'm playing with them. I'm actually playing, you know what I'm saying, I get a 10-day, then I end up getting another 10-day.
How did it feel to be in your first NBA game after the road that you've had just to get there?
Yeah, it felt good, man. It was fun. It was enjoyable. I mean, I had, I want to say my first official field goal was also was in Philadelphia against Miami, ironically. That was kind of a moment that always stuck with me, too. It was it was a mid-range jumper. I think it was over Udonis.
Oh, really?
Still trying to find it. I got to find the picture because I need him to sign that. I need him to sign that for me. So that's like kind of, you know, my first NBA field goal. Something I always remember. I in Philadelphia, the first time I got hung in on a professional court. Like, it was a lot of crazy stuff going on. We got booed. Like, it was the craziest environment for 20 days. Like, if we didn't score 100 points, we got booed. Like, I'm like, yo, that's when I realized Philly fans was cutthroat. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, y'all supposed to be supporting us and y'all ain't here booing us, but we got 98 points.
It's a pretty high stakes environment to have your first sort of NBA official NBA experience in.
Yeah. But it was fun, man. I enjoyed it, man. It was a real good time. And then from there, after my second 10-day with them, I ended up getting a cut. Or not cut, but my 10-day was over in Philly, or in New York. So they had offered like a 4-year, like non-guaranteed contract. And like me and my agent was like, yeah, that's not what we're looking for. So we're just going to go back to the drawing board and figure out what's next. So instead of going back to the D-League, I just went to Detroit and just worked out with my trainer every day and just, you know, just grinding again. It was cold as hell in Detroit, man.
Probably nowhere to be but the gym, I guess.
Man, to this day, I haven't spent any vacation time or any extra days in Detroit besides when we go play the Pistons. Like, the memories was not good for me.
So talk to, you know, sort of getting your first, like, you know, real NBA contract. And now you're with the, you know, the Miami Heat. You know, what is it like to sort of daily be in the mix? You're putting up real minutes now.
It's great. I mean, I look back often just about, you know what I'm saying, my story, how to get here, you know what I'm saying, how I got here. I played every role in the NBA, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've been here, this will be my 10th season, and I've been anywhere from not playing to playing garbage minute, coming off the bench, starting to, you know what I'm saying, I've done it all, you know what I'm saying? So it's been enjoyable, man. It's been a blessing, you know what I'm saying? Like, just to be able to think about where I come from and to, you know what I'm saying, say that I came from, you know what I'm saying, a small area, and now be able to provide for my family in a great way and do it playing basketball at the highest level. You know what I'm saying? Like, so being in Miami is like, it's a blessing too, because at the end of the day, it kind of like, it brings my story together to me, because I started in Miami, you know what I'm saying? Summer league, terrible. Got my first field goal versus Miami, you know what I'm saying? And now to be able to be on a real contract and playing, like, and we made it to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. We were the number one team in the East, and to be able to contribute to help the team get there speaks volumes. And it's just kind of just the story, it's still going. It's not over yet. You know what I'm saying? So
I'm curious, you know, in addition to your, you know, sort of what I would say is a very, you know, successful professional basketball career so far. You said you're about to go into your 10th year. There's not a lot of people who've come through the NBA who, you know, relative to everybody who's tried to make it, who can say that.
Like, I think about it, like, I got people from who were drafted my year, you know what I'm saying? Drafted number one picks, you know what I'm saying? Lottery picks that are no longer in the NBA, you know what I'm saying? So, like, for me to still be here, like, something's working, you know what I'm saying? Something's working.
You know, given everything you've sort of overcome and everything that you've accomplished, and now that you have your own, you know, sort of growing family, which is, you know, incredible, congratulations. Have your experiences, particularly your experiences as a kid at home with your mom, has that influenced sort of how you parent your kids already, how you plan to sort of parent your kids when they get older and they have dreams?
I would say it shows me what not to do. You know what I'm saying? So I'm here to do the opposite of how I was raised. You know what I'm saying? I'm here to do better. You know what I'm saying? So my kids can be better. Give them all the opportunity. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, like, we were poor. You know what I'm saying? We didn't have no money. We didn't have much. There was times we didn't know what we was going to eat. Like, our cabinets would be empty. We would come out of, you know what I'm saying, head into the car, and there would be bags of canned goods by our car that people had given us for us to be able to eat. Like, it wasn't nothing to repeat. You know what I'm saying? Not saying that, you know what I'm saying, my mother wasn't, you know what I'm saying, a loving parent. But it showed me how, you know what I'm saying, like, I don't want to ever have to put my kids through that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's tough. Just, like I said, just doing better. You know what I'm saying? Doing better, being better for them, and allowing them to be themselves. That's my biggest thing. Like, even if my sons don't want to play basketball, just do what you love. You know what I'm saying? Whatever that may be. Like, of course, I want them to play basketball. Of course, I'm going to train them. Of course, I'm going to have them right. But if it comes down to it, and you want to be a surgeon, or you want to be open a business, or whatever it may be, like, wherever your heart takes you, like, I support it.
Wow. I think that's very admirable. Did your mother ever, like, start to see eye to eye with you? Did you ever sort of, like, make amends on that level, or sort of, did you finally sort of reach an understanding?
Yeah. So it took some years, you know what I'm saying? There was a time that, me and my mom, like, did not communicate, like, didn't talk at all. She, first year at USC, she didn't come to any games. And, finally, one day she had called me on the phone, and we just kind of talking, and we came to an understanding that, you know, this is who I am. You know what I'm saying? This is who I'm going to be. Like, if you can accept me as a man, as who I am, and not try to keep pushing, like, all this religious stuff on me, like, you have to understand, like, that's you, that's not me. And when she, you know what I'm saying, came around and understood that, and that's when our relationship started to, you know what I'm saying, get better. And come. She came to my second year, her first game she came to was my second year at USC. She started coming to games and stuff like that. So I was really good to see her there, to share what I do with her.
Did she enjoy going to SC games, or was that just something she kind of sat through for, you know?
Nah, I think she enjoyed it, man. She had face paint on her, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, she bought it. It wasn't like a fake, like, oh yeah, let me just see. Like, nah, it was like, I got my son back and I support him.
Thank you so much to Dwayne Dedmon for sharing his story. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd so appreciate you spreading the word by rating and reviewing the podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow the show on Spotify, as well as on our Instagram at StillCherriedPod for more updates on past and future episodes. If you or someone you know has a story you know has to be told on the show, please reach out on Instagram or by email at StillCherriedPod@gmail.com. I'm always eager to meet new people and hear new stories to share with the world. I hope one day one of them will be yours. Until then, thanks for listening.